As many of you know, this year at Seattle Insight, we're exploring transcendental dependent arising, one of the Buddha's maps to the liberation of the mind and heart. A path that begins with dukkha, realizing the suffering that is a part of life. But instead of adding to that suffering by getting caught in the narrative, we choose faith in the Dharma in another way. Faith that there's a way out of the cycle of suffering towards something more skillful. From faith, we move to joy. That first spark of delight when we see, yes, this works, this is working. From joy, we move to rapture, or maybe more easily recognized as intense interest in the Dharma. We're really, okay, this worked, I'm really going to get to this now. That can become quite enervating, but eventually it eases into tranquility or calm. And this month we've been exploring what arises from the tranquility, happiness or sukha, a quiet happiness or contentment that will allow us to collect and unify our minds, which is next month's topic, beginning next Sunday, samadhi. Such an uplifting path. The earlier Sundays in June, Nina, Linda, and Lauren provided a wonderfully rich background and examples of how to work with this, with all this happiness. And I love the title of Carrie's Monday night talk, Contentment with What's Here Already. I think that kind of sums it up for me. This, to me, is the key to finding peace in the midst of everything. Finding this happiness or contentment is essential at a time of upheaval in our country and our world. It's far too easy right now to get caught up in worry, grief, anger, doubt that we're doing enough. In the midst of so much suffering, we can feel selfish about focusing on our happiness. But it's not selfish. We need to cultivate resilience so that we can be there for others. And a crucial piece of cultivating resilience is seeing, acknowledging, and being grateful for the beauty in our lives. We need to learn what nourishes us and where we aren't content. This is a part of our practice, and our practice supports our deepest intentions. So let's take a moment to bow to ourselves in gratitude and appreciation for being here this morning, for the sincerity of our practice. Gratitude, appreciation. That was a moment of sukha. This sweetness is essential to the path. What the Buddha is teaching with this sequence and in many other teachings that I didn't notice at first is that concentration, our ability to focus, comes not from stern discipline, not from forcing ourselves to sit down and demand that our minds get quiet. When I say it like that, you can see how impossible that is. Collecting and unifying our minds requires a state of ease, sukha, happiness or contentment. Why are we moving towards samadhi, collecting and unifying our minds? In order to see what is true clearly, to see past the veil of our illusions, our stories, and see what is real. How can we help others if we're not seeing clearly? And we're not seeing them clearly and listening to them. We approached this with another set of steps last year, the Four Noble Truths. There's suffering. It's caused by grasping. There's a way out of this extra stuff, suffering caused by the grasping, which is the Eightfold Path. Right view, intention, speech, action, livelihood, effort, and mindfulness, which all lead to right concentration. We clear the hindrances as best we can so that we can find the peace in which to be with what is real. The steps in the Eightfold Path untangle the tangle of our minds, help us release all the detritus we collect as we tumble through life, the preconceptions, the paranoias, the opinions, the ideas of who we are, which we fiercely protect. Only when we release these can we truly see what's real, free of our baggage, our stories. And we do this all gently, step by step, relaxing our grip, opening our minds and hearts to receive what arises. We stop resisting and instead get curious about ourselves, our lives. This is how it is right now. As I was thinking about this talk, Suze shared a quote from Ute Janiyah that fits perfectly here. Always bear in mind that meditation is a learning process during which you get to know the mind and body relationship. Just be natural and simple. Learn from every experience. There is no need to slow down unnaturally. You simply want to see things as they are. There is no need to make an effort to concentrate. Our objective is to become more and more aware. The more continuous awareness is, the sharper and more receptive the mind becomes. You hear what he says? Be natural and simple. There's no need to slow down unnaturally. No need to make an effort to concentrate. Our objective is to become more and more aware. So this morning I want to explore how we can become more aware of sukha. I'm going to use the term contentment rather than happiness because it works better for me. It feels more accessible. Happiness seems a tall order and such a broad term that for me it doesn't convey the quiet state of mind that grounds and centers us, that gently hums in the background of our lives. The trouble is, this contentment is subtle, easily hidden beneath all the noise in our lives. We need to get quiet. One way is to pause now and then during the day, particularly helpful when we're getting stirred up by politics, by frustration about how a project is going, by something someone said or did. We stop, take some deep breaths and check in. How is it for me right now? Try not to get caught up in the narrative, but just notice if we're holding tension, how that feels. Can we loosen our jaw? Maybe stand up and shake out our hips, our hands. If we're not alone, we can still take the breaths, take a quick survey of our body tension, temperature. And here's the radical idea. What feels good for me right now? We might notice our surroundings. We might notice that our cat or dog or child is being cute, trying to get our attention. The fact that despite our tension, we're feeling pretty good. Can we spare a moment of gratitude for what's right before we dive back in? We might find we've lost interest in the politics. We're more at ease about how the project's going. What that person said or did isn't so awful. What we've done is created some space, some distance from whatever was grabbing us. And we've tuned into the sukha that's here along with the tension. We're quieter and able to notice what's not irritating us, what's actually quite good. Or at least enough. We have the space to be generous with our attention. We're wired to pay attention to things that stress us because those are warnings, danger, like deadlines. I have a deadline at the end of August. So since the beginning of the month, I've been reviewing the 75% of the book I've finished so far. I had originally hoped it would be a quick read through, just to get everything clear in my mind before I head into the ending, finishing a complete draft by the end of the month, which is Tuesday. But instead, I've been reshaping scenes, removing some, adding some, consolidating characters, and I've become tenser and tenser about how slowly I'm moving. In the evening, I've decided I'm slowing down, I'm a lousy writer, I can't do this anymore. All really familiar feelings at this time, actually. And on, until a few nights ago, I was so down on myself, so wired that I snapped at my husband about something that at any other time I would take in stride. No big deal. I apologized to him. I told him I was mad at myself, not him. And he wondered why I was mad. And you know, I had to ask myself that question. I've been doing the necessary work to create something I'll take pride in. Fulfilling my obligation to my publisher, yes, but it's my name on the book. I want to make it the best it can be, and I've been working toward that. Why am I angry? I am happy with how it's shaping up. I've had insights that led to changes that are great. I thought, I'm content with the work so far. What a discovery. Can I notice that? Can I feel grateful for my work? My perseverance? Can I see that everything's just as it should be? Can I be content? By the time I worked through this, I was laughing at myself. I've spent this month exploring Sukha, but look what a rabbit hole I've fallen into. Joke's on me. I saw all this because I was shocked into getting quiet, checking in with myself. Only then did I feel how tightly I was holding my feelings about my work. This may seem odd, but this brings me to another way to quiet the noise. Drop the hope. This is Pema Chodron's phrase for this. She says that hope robs us of the present moment. Hope implies that something's wrong with how things are and we need to fix it. Hope is projecting out into the future rather than paying attention to what's going on right now. You know, we only ever have right now. I had plans, a schedule, an ideal schedule, and I was kicking myself for not being where I hoped to be this week. Fortunately, while I was working, I wasn't thinking of the schedule. I was absorbed in the writing, in shaping it. You know, but when away from it, all I could think of was my arbitrary schedule. And the thing is, I've been busy doing the work I expected to be doing next month. After I'd finished the first draft, I just found it was better to smooth it out as I worked through it rather than leave myself pages of notes that I'd have to review. I was fine. I was better than fine. But I was tripping over that hope. I was hoping to be other than I was, and so busy with the ideal that I didn't notice I'd found a better way. I am content with how it's going. I'm happy. I don't need to force myself into doing it differently. Big insight. I've been thinking about how all these lists of things that need to arise before samadhi might make it seem as if our meditation is pointless until somehow we've reached the summit of all these lists. No. That's one of the reasons I prefer to translate samadhi as collecting and unifying the mind rather than concentration, because for me, these progressive verbs, collecting and unifying, remind me that it's a process, a practice. And all along, we're practicing that. Meditation, getting quiet, is how we get there. Practicing the breath. One of the first benefits of meditation is the simple act of sitting down, or kneeling, or slow walking, with the intention to move into stillness. Setting aside a time to explore being still, and seeing what arises. Thoughts arise, we get caught up in them, we notice that we're miles away from our body, and we return over and over. For the half hour or however long we resolve to sit, we return to our body, our breath, and experience how it is for us just now. We might notice aches and pains, or a feeling of needing to be somewhere, a sense of time rushing past us, but we take a breath and stay. Nothing to do in this allotted time but sit with ourselves. Can we appreciate that we have the time and space in our lives to do this? How wonderful. What a gift. Can we appreciate our sincerity? These are tastes of sukha, contentment. I started exploring this appreciation for my practice after listening to a talk by Brian Lesage. He suggested we discover the sukha in our lives by exploring enoughness. I love that word, enoughness. In meditation, we might notice the quality of our moments of being present rather than the quantity. I gave you a taste of this with meditation instruction. Can I fully be with this in-breath? Can I fully be with this out-breath? Then our minds might float away, but we return and try again. Maybe out of 30 minutes, we manage to be present for 10. Let that be enough. Yes, I can be content with that. That's 10 minutes of peace that you wouldn't have had. An appreciation of enoughness leads to gratitude and generosity. We aren't focused on lack, but on abundance. I can be generous. Looking back at my frustration with the progress of my project, had I focused on all the fine revisions rather than the failed schedule, I wouldn't have lashed out. I very likely would have been much pleasanter to be with for weeks. And I would have noticed the sukha in my life. Things are going well, it's enough. I want to share this joy with everyone. I've mentioned how we're wired to notice the negative, the stressors, but we can change that with practice. I learned this from James Barraza's book, Awakening Joy. It's filled with practices to help us notice the joy in our lives. And through noticing what brings us joy, we learn how to nurture it. Create more joy. Contentment is a quiet joy. It might be harder to notice, but this month, when not stressing about my slipping schedule, I've been making a point to notice the sukha in my life. And there's so much. My garden, my cat, my life, my where I live, sangha, friends, on and on. It's not self-indulgent to take a moment to notice all the good in our lives, all the sukha. It's replenishing. It keeps us from burning out, from overwhelm, from snapping at our companions, from racing off to buy something or do something that's advertised to bring us happiness, from running away from our lives. Not everything's perfect, but it's enough. And we're not looking for what we need to fix. We're seeing what's here, right now, and feeling gratitude, which gives us a sense of abundance rather than lack. And it inspires us to be generous, to share this abundance with others, whether in giving them our full attention, offering help, we're refreshed and available. This is not selfish. There will be times when we can't find much to rejoice in, but we can remember the practice and offer our attention. It's okay to say, it's hard to be me right now. this hurts. I feel awful. I just want it to stop. We're acknowledging how we're feeling right now. We're with it. We can give ourselves a hug, real or virtual, and use Justin Mickelson's phrases for healing. I see you to the part of me that's hurting. I understand why you would feel like this right now. And really be sincere with that. I care about you. And I'm here for you, no matter what. We can do this for ourselves. And just give yourself that moment of care, of attention. You might ask yourself, what could I do to help right now? What do I need? And sit with that. It's so much more skillful than being oblivious to a buildup of hurt, of resentment that's going to come out in some action or attack that we'll regret. Because that's a cry for help. We're pausing, paying attention to how we're feeling. We know how it is for us right now. We are aware. This pause, this break, taking this time to be there, listening, supporting ourselves, just as we would a friend or a family member. It is far more likely to ease our distress than letting this slowly rise to a boil unseen. It's not a miracle cure, but we might feel a little lighter. Just the act of being there for ourselves is a moment of sweetness, of sukha. So much better than layering suffering upon suffering. This quiet happiness or contentment is worth taking the time to notice, appreciate, and nurture. When we're noticing this, we're not caught up in the past or the future or someone else's business. We're paying attention to how it is for us in this moment. It's so easy to miss the hum of contentment in the soundtrack of our day. I love taking my phone out on the deck in the early evening and opening up the Merlin app and set it to identify all the bird calls I'm hearing. It helps me notice so much more, appreciate the variety of birds in my neighborhood. Just this morning, I had 6. It brings me joy. And since I've been doing this, I'm more aware of the bird song outside throughout my day. We can do this with that hum of contentment, of enoughness. Practicing what's right, practicing noticing what's right, and see how that quiets the hindrances, allows us to be more available. Just think where we've come from this exploration of transcendental dependent arising. We feel the dukkha and we choose to have faith in the practice. Through aligning our intentions with the Eightfold Path, we have moments of joy that encourage us to continue. Diving into the practice, we get moments of rapture, and they quiet into tranquility, which expands into contentment, which allows our minds and hearts to settle, to collect and unify, to focus. This entire sequence might occur many times in a day in many small ways, but we're choosing this rather than spinning deeper and deeper into dukkha. Can we be grateful for this? Can we be happy with our sincerity, however that looks? Can we say, yes, I'm content. This is enough. And I'm staying on this path that's benefiting me and everyone with whom I come in contact. Thank you for your kind attention. So I'm going to break us into some breakout groups now. And this is your opportunity to talk about how you've been finding or nurturing the contentment in your life, how this month has been going for you. Maybe it's been really tough for you to feel this happiness. And this is a chance to talk about it with a few people. Remember that we're not we're just listening and sharing and not advising unless somebody asks for advice. We're just being present and witnessing people and being together. So I'm going to give you 15 minutes, and I hope that you all stay and really enjoy these moments of touching base, and then we'll see you at the end, maybe to share what you talked about. Welcome back. I hope you all had a good time talking with each other. And now we have some time for you to share with the larger group. The same thing you shared in your small group, or perhaps you would like to, you thought of something else that you'd like to say. Because I didn't get to hear any of it. Judith.
I will start. Yeah, I had a similar month in a way to you. I mean, you had your book that you were getting all wound up about, and I had my contact with my family that I was getting all wound up about, and my irritation at what I finally realized, that I was irritated because they weren't reading me perfectly. They were, you know, like now that I'm old, there are things I can't do, but there are things that I can do that a lot of people my age can't do, and they are supposed to know what I can and can't do. And they didn't. And so then I found myself getting irritated at myself for being irritated at them, you know, the whole routine. So it's been interesting that all of this would come up in the month where we are focusing on contentment.
It is curious, isn't it?
It is curious, yes.
I think there's a conspiracy.
I think so. I think so. So anyway.
And it all went pretty well, didn't it?
Well, it did. I mean, yes, I learned things. Let's put it that way. I definitely learned some things about myself. And I actually, once I figured it out with my family, I actually transferred all my irritation to my best friend, or one of my best friends, who is also not reading me perfectly.
Oh no.
So I had to go through the whole thing again, you know, with her. Anyway, that's been my month.
Each time we learn. Deanna, morning. You need to unmute.
There I am. Sorry. It's funny. I always think, okay, I'll remember, and then I forget to unmute. Thank you for your talk. Something that stood out to me was, you know, like pausing throughout the day and notice what feels good to me right now, like notice that contentment. And just thinking about over the month, I find that happiness and that contentment comes when I'm present in the moment and can pause and just think about, you know, what brings me that joy or happiness right now. And I also like what you said about the hope, to, you know, drop the hope. It removes us from the present moment, and it's like something's wrong, so you're hoping for this other thing. And that was an eye opener for me too, because I've been trying not to use that word hope from other teachers I've heard, but you made it more clear. So thank you for your talk.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you, Deanna. Yeah, that dropping the hope really, really hit me this time. I've read, it's in her book, When Things Fall Apart, and I don't know how many times I've read that book, but this time it really, really struck me. Lyndall.
Okay, there, I've got it. This talk about the hope and dropping the hope, it reminded me of Steve Armstrong, who some of you know, one of our longtime teachers. He passed away not too long ago from a brain tumor. And when he was going through all of his illness, one of the things he kept saying that helped him to get through it was no hope, no fear. Just sort of being in the present moment with what was happening, how things were changing day to day to day to day. And I mean, he had like a, when he was first diagnosed, I think like a 6-month prognosis. He ended up living for 7 years through all these changes. But whenever I think about that, no hope, I think about him and his ability to live with this in such a wonderful and graceful way.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for reminding me of that, Wendell, for all of us. He was, yeah, when I remember him talking about that and just being here and knowing what's going on right now is so much more healing.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. Soothes.
I want to respond to another part of your talk, which really struck me. Your statement, everything is just as it should be. And it reminded me that all projects, whether you're rewriting a book or cleaning the house or planting a garden or anything of vast importance or little importance, takes hard work. There's almost always a glitch in the plan. You think it's going to go from point A to point B, and then there's a pothole that shows up. And you just, it doesn't, I mean, it's not that it always is that way, but often. And so that perspective of things are just as the way they should be, because that's the way they are. There's just that common sense acceptance of this is the way it is. No resistance, figure it out, be okay. What else is happening right now? I just really appreciated that piece of your talk. So thank you.
Thank you, Suze. Yeah, it's so many teachers have often spoken of that, you know, everything, we are exactly where we should be, how we should be right now, because how could it be otherwise? And yeah, it's, we expect some sort of magic.
Yeah, Sylvia Boorstein likes say, if it could be otherwise, it would be.
There you go.
If it could be otherwise, you would be, but you're not. You are where you are. And I hear her voice saying that and love it.
Yeah, I love that. Anyone else? Jeannie.
Yes, hi. I appreciated your talk and my time with Faith also. She reminded me, she has a background in anthropology and how when we zoom out on the history of the universe, there's always been lots of struggle and painful things. And then I also think about, it's interesting how we can zoom in on like just one breath or half a breath and inhale and find peace there too. Just that zoom lens of life, like, and adjusting it along the way.
Yeah. I love that. That's really beautiful. Just the larger and the smaller, and we're all, it's all us. It's all, we're part of it all. Yeah. So it sounds like we're winding down, and I just wanted to take a moment to, again, thank you for your attention, for your sincerity of practice, for being here this morning. I wanted to mention Donna. We are, Seattle Insight is is a completely volunteer organization. So we depend on the generosity of the Sangha to operate. The teachers give their teachings freely and don't ask for anything. So on our website, you can go to any page on the website and find the buttons for donating to the teachers, the Sangha, and volunteering, which is a wonderful way to really feel a part of the Sangha. There are always volunteer opportunities. And certainly the way I felt a part of the Sangha and really felt that I'd found a home was when I started volunteering. Small ways, large ways. You don't have to be an expert in anything for most of the volunteer work. For some of them you do, but do check it out and think about how you'd like to be part of this group. And then in closing, I wanted to dedicate the merit of our practice to all who are suffering. Our Charlotte, the loss of her sister, and so many people. The people in Venezuela with the earthquake. People in war zones. People who feel that their rights are being taken away from them. May the merit of our practice be of benefit to all beings. May all beings find community. May all beings be seen and heard and respected and loved. And may all beings find peace. Thank you all. You can unmute to say goodbye. And if you want to stick around for a half hour, I'll keep the Zoom room open.